Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Fear-Free Passive Investing, where it's all about discussing passive commercial real estate investing and the fears that new investors have when learning about it. We interview past newbie investors on what fears and questions they had when they got started, as well as tips and tricks to give you the confidence to make the leap. Let's face those fears and jump right in.
All right, welcome back. Today I have with me Dino Pierce. I'm really excited about today's show. Dino is a father of three, a real estate investor, and he owns his own medical device company, which keeps him really busy. We're lucky that he took time out of his day to come on our show, and he gave us some awesome content. So with that, let's jump right in and talk with Dino.
Dino, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
I'm really excited. So for those who might not know, Dino and I are both in Denver. We attend a lot of the same events. And in fact, we are in a mastermind together every single week. So Dino and I are good friends and we work together a lot. So I know Dino's story, but I want to take me through it one more time. How were you first exposed to passive real estate investing? And, you know, what are you currently invested in?
Yeah, so I was exposed to passive real estate investing when I first started in real estate about 5 years ago. I was doing what people call wholesaling, but it didn't take me long to realize that I was, like I like to say, selling the cow. So instead of wholesaling, what I would start to do is partner with residential redevelopers, like give them the contract, let them do all the work, and then we'll settle up on the back end and do some profit sharing. But in addition to that, because you're still like, okay, well, you still haven't lent any money, right? So what I did was I would, we'd write out an operating agreement, get everything, you know, contractually there that we needed to do. And I would lend money, not all of the money, $20,000 to $25,000 and no points, which helped them a ton, but we would just do simple, like straight interest. And that would get paid, you know, to me when the project was completed. That's my first real estate experience for lending money passively, because I wasn't running the crew. The only thing I did active was find the deal. But if you want to go rewind even further back, since you did mention I'm a Navy veteran, when I was in the Navy, I had a really good friend who he was married. They wanted to, him and his wife wanted to live off base, and they had a baby on the way, and they helped him get his feet off the ground. Get this, your listeners are all going to want to borrow money from me. I lent him $15,000. And when I say I lent it to him, I mean, like, I lent it to him and said, like, pay me back. There was no interest. Wow. If you put the pencil to it, I lost money because I could have invested it and had a return. But anyway, that was my first taste of lending money.
That doesn't surprise me in the least bit. For people that know you, you are the most selfless person I met. Like, you are so concerned with other people's happiness and making sure that they're meeting their goals. Like, that doesn't surprise me in the least bit.
Yeah, I know.
You know, this podcast is all about fear and mitigating that fear and addressing it. So other than losing all of your money, did you have any other fears about passive investing in any of those deals?
No. And I mean, even I didn't throw this in, but I'm also a limited partner in apartment syndication. So, where I'm passive in that as well. But I, no, that was my number one fear was, yes, losing my money, because I knew that the way everything, I knew that that's what I had to lose. And the way things were written, you know, even in the apartment syndication, you know, this is not going to happen, but it could. If that went south, it's non-recourse to me as a limited partner. So no one's going to come out, even if the operators violated all the boy carve-outs and they had, you know, malicious intent, as a limited partner, I'm not responsible for it. That's going to be, they have to answer for that. So for me, that was the biggest thing is, and you know, one who's going to come after my assets, my home or anything like that. It was, am I going to lose this money? That was my biggest fear.
You mentioned, well, a couple of things that I want to touch on. But first, before we go back to that first LP deal on the apartment syndication, you mentioned big boy carve-outs. Can you explain just very briefly what that is and why listeners should be aware of?
Sure. So a bad boy carve out is what they have in place for a non-recourse agency debt. So when a syndication team of operators get Freddie, Fannie, HUD to lend them, you know, over $1 million, sometimes several million dollars, they'll call that, it depends, but they'll call it for the most part non-recourse. And what that means is if the deal goes south for any unforeseen reasons and no one was at malicious fault, like they did, they had fraud involved or anything like that, they didn't do it on purpose, it's non-recourse. Everyone is going to lose their money and it stops there. We're not going to go after your assets or anything like that. However, the bad boy carve-out says, if we investigate and we find fraud or malicious intent, anything that gives us reason to think that you guys actually did this on purpose, we are going to come after your personal assets. And I believe there could also be some jail time.
Yeah, on the general partner side, not as a limited.
You're right. Investor. So the limited, exactly. The limited partners, though, because they're limited, they are truly, they're like, well, we didn't. I didn't know they were doing that. I would never have invested in this deal. So they're, yes, they are truly non-recourse always, for the most part, the way I understand it. And it's the general partnership, is the active investors who are going to have to answer. And that's why I'm glad you said that, because I bring that up when talking to limited partners. I'm sure you do as well. And they're like, well, is this non-recourse? Yes. But let me remind you of a bad boy carve out. So even non-recourse, in my opinion, is recourse debt.
Absolutely. It is. Absolutely. It is. And, you know, there's almost a myth that goes around, you know, real estate investing circles that, oh, if it's non-recourse, you know, I can walk away scot-free.
No,
not necessarily. There's some things that are in bad boy carve-outs that you might not consider malicious, or you might not consider something that should bring that up, but it very well could. And you got to be aware of that. So take us back to the first deal that you passively invested in for that apartment syndication you talked about.
Okay. So the first opportunity apartment syndication, it is it's a 50 unit deal in Huntsville, Alabama. And I was like any LP. I had a relationship. I knew the general partnership team, and they gave me their, you know, the deal deck, or what might be considered an offering memorandum geared towards a passive investor, which outlined the team, the track record, what the business plan was, how we were going to bump rents, you know, just told the whole story. And I really liked that market, and you know, as the team as well.
How's it performing? How's that market? How is the operators? Is everything going well? Is there challenges?
Yeah, so far everything is going well when looking, you know, at the reporting, and there's nothing to be, you know, concerned about. I think it's a great market, and I'm actually going to, you know, look at other opportunities in that market just because of my experience with that deal. I think that market has a lot to offer, where there's opportunities to find buildings that are just not at market. There's a really good business plan in place and story to tell there.
How much roughly, you know, you don't have to give exact time, but how much time do you spend looking at those monthly reporting?
Or, it's a narrative that I read. And so I would say less than an hour a month, because we get monthly reporting, and it's pretty easy to understand as far as, hey, here's the targets for the expenses and income, and they almost have it highlighted like red, yellow, green. And then again, you read into the narrative, but less than an hour. Yeah,
it is. Very passive.
Once you've done, I think most of the work is up front. So if you're sitting in a position where you have, I don't know, $500,000 and you want to make an investment across like five syndications, you know, so I think as a limited partner, your biggest time, the time consuming, is going to be doing the due diligence on the asset and, you know, of course, your team. Once you're in it, you're limited. There's very little that you can do anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point. What's been the hardest thing about passive investing?
I think it's the getting over that fear and saying, okay, I'm wiring 50, 100, whatever it is. And I'm, you know, giving it to this group of operators and I'm like, I fully believe in them, but at the same time, I'm a little bit nervous. But I think once you do it and you, it's all how everything's like, you have to put everything into perspective. Yeah. Okay. How does it feel to have a somewhat personal relationship with these operators? Like, do you have their cell phone? Do they have yours? You have their emails? Because guess what? If you take that $50,000 and go invest into Coca-Cola, Nike, Puma, whatever you name it, you're not, that CEO's not calling you and you're not calling him or her either. So it's all relative, but yeah. Because it's out there publicly and anyone can do it, I guess people think less about it. And in actuality, there's more, far more corporate corruption than there's going to be on a very personal, in a very personal private offering where hopefully there's zero.
Yeah. And you have a substantial pre-existing relationship with that person on most of these deals. So you know the person going into it. But that, so that brings up a really good point. How did you know, or did you know the person you were investing with was trustworthy?
Yes. So I did know because I was able to partnered with what I like the saying, just learned the saying today, actually, partner with pros. I had partnered with these pros before on the active side. And so to partner with these pros on a limited partner side made it much more easy because number one, I think when you're a limited partner, there's levels of trust and it goes, Richard Wilson is famous for this. I don't know if he coined this phrase, but there's kind of three levels. Number one is you have to be comfortable with the investment. So if I don't believe in real estate, I shouldn't be looking at apartment syndications or private money lending for fix and flips.
Right.
But if I like and love real estate, which I do, obviously, number one, the first hurdle is, or the first like rung of the ladder's climb. I like this BC class workforce housing. I love that. Step number two, what team do I trust to put my money in their hands and have them make it sweat for me, you know, and double or whatever over so many years? Once I have that hurdle hit, it's like, okay, now I've got the asset class. I have the right team. Can they bring me something that has a business plan, an opportunity in a market I believe in that I like? So once I have the first two, it's a matter of them showing me their menu and me selecting.
Well, that's a really great way of thinking about it. Almost like a restaurant. You go there and you already know roughly what you like, what you don't like, and you look for something that appeals to you.
Exactly. So once you have the first two levels of trust in the class, the asset class itself, knowing how what you believe it's going to be able to do in recession, good times, bad times, all of it, you believe in this team of operators, which is the biggest hurdle. And then it's a matter of them having something that is in alignment with your goals that's going to bring back, you know, the right return. Some people are cash on cash investors. Some people like total return on investment. Other people, you know, they'll just look at they want to in and out in 3 years. It all depends.
Yeah. Well, so you mentioned the hardest thing for you was that fear, getting over the fear of wiring the money. Are there any resources like books or podcasts or blogs that helped you get over your fears when you first started looking at these passive investments?
Yes. So, well, not the first passive. The first passive investment, not counting my friend that I didn't, not counting him, but the first real passive was on the single family fix and flip side. And this person had a track record that they were able to show me. They never lost money, you know, to an investor. So those were already, I was crossing some hurdles. It was a great flipping market, you know, here in Colorado, which is, as you know, a really hot market for residential. If you're going to do, you know, be involved in flipping. So it was them being able to show me the track record. And luckily, I didn't lose money. I made money on that one. But it sounded like from talking to others that could have went south, although it didn't, because lo and behold, I didn't know, but one of the people that I had partnered with owed other people money, even though the track record that I was shown and believed in said otherwise. So luckily, though, we closed on that one. I never lent to that person again, and I was able to, you know, make it out without being burned, put it that way. But from the apartment side, which is what I'm more into now versus single family private money lending, is, you know, what I did, and I encourage all limited partners to do this, is I learned the business inside and out first, as if I were going to do it actively. And now I mean, you and I both, we're on the active side, you know, in general partnership teams and operating teams. But I think even if you're not going to be active, you should know what these people are supposed to do, how the business operates, what to look for in a market, how to be able to underwrite behind this team. Because as a limited partner, even on my active deals, it is not out of the question for one of my limited partners to say, can I see the trailing 12? Can I see the expenses? Like, they want to underwrite behind you. I think that that's great. So you have to know how to do that. That got me comfortable with the asset class and the market, but it also got me comfortable by partnering with the pros, because one of the people that I learned the business from is involved in this very deal that I'm a limited partner in. So that's how I got over it. It's kind of like they taught me the business. They were involved. I know how conservative their underwriting has to be in order for them to say yes. And that really helped me overcome any fears I had.
Nice. What about, did you read any books or maybe listen to a couple podcasts that gave you a little more confidence?
Well, they also, I plug into many podcasts, but specifically to syndication. Yeah, I listen to podcasts to where, and I think hearing story after story, both, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, I know as a limited partner, even with the operator's best intentions, there's things that no one can predict. You can't predict a plane crashing into your apartment. Like, no one ever underwrote for that. Or a train going off the track and running into it or whatever. So you just, there's things you don't know. So I know those can happen. But I think once you get to know the operators, and you should really, you know them, and they should know you as well, those fears kind of go away. But hearing story after story about, you know, hey, yes, I invested $100,000 into this syndication, and what happened was this. I got quarterly payouts. I was able to experience these tax benefits, and I was able to share in the profit and put it back into another one. So that helped climb the trust ladder for the asset class, and knowing that those types of operators were out there. I just needed to make sure that the ones that I align myself with were those people too.
Man, you just hit the nail on the head of why this podcast exists. Like, I want to put a face, or at least a voice, to people who have successfully invested and it's going well for them. And, you know, I do want to hear from people that it's not going well from too, and figure out why that is and what they could have done differently. Or, you know, like you said, you can't predict everything, but there are a lot of things that you need to know. And I want to get to the heart of how people got over their fear. And that, you know, that's a great example of listening to other people's stories. So here is the final question for you, Dino. What advice would you give to someone who is interested in passively investing in real estate, but scared to take the first leap?
If you're interested in passive, but scared to take that first leap, but you're willing to do something like, for example, invest into the stock market just because it's traded publicly instead of privately, I think that's crazy. And I'll tell a quick story. And it's coming from someone who's been there. So I had over $100,000 in the stock market invested into a company. It became public information that the CEO had blatantly lied as far as the performance of the company, and I still get letters to this day about, would you participate in the class action lawsuit against this company because this happened to me? So by the way, I'm not involved in any lawsuits. But long story short, we went from over $50 a share to literally between, I think it was $22 or $23 a share almost overnight. I lost like half of my investment. And it took 5 years just to climb back. It was bad CEO, still good company, great product. And they made it back and they were able to recover, and they have the right leadership in place now. But I was at that point, I was like, I am done. I would have made out better burying it in the backyard and fighting inflation than I did with this investment. So what I say to someone who's scared is, know that on Wall Street, the stories that, like I just told, really do happen. It happened to me. Now, fortunately, I'm smart enough to not like panic and sell. I'm like, I'm going to ride this out. But still, if that over 100,000 would have been into an apartment syndication, a lot of those are modeled off of 5 years. And instead of me actually losing, because I ended up, after taxes and how everything goes, I lost money on that investment. Instead of me losing money, chances are I could have possibly doubled it and got tax benefits, not heavily taxed, and cash flow during the process while waiting for the appreciation and while they force the appreciation. So I would say, if you're nervous about it, listen to podcasts like this, hear true stories, learn the asset class so that you feel comfortable with it. Learn BNC workforce housing. Learn about what happens to that type of asset when it's in the right market during a recession, because I think you'll like what you learn. And learn about your operators, and then you got to take the leap. Though there's still going to be, you're still going to feel, I'm about to, press the button, so to speak, to wire this 50,000 or 150 or whatever it is. But at that point, I mean, hey, you got to say, it's only me in my way at this point. I like the asset. I like the operators. I like what's on the menu. Why am I saying no?
That's, wow, that was a really good answer to that question. And thank you for sharing that story. That can't be
easy. You're welcome.
it just goes to show, nobody blinks an eye when the stock market loses value. I mean, people lose money in the stock market every single day and nobody blinks an eye. It's almost accepted. But, losing money in real estate, you become a failure, or, all this stigma attached to it, and it scares a lot of people. Exactly like you were saying, looking at the track record of multifamily, I think you would be pleasantly surprised.
Yes, you would. And I just wanted to throw in there, so by the way, that didn't happen like during the crash or the great recession. Like, everyone else's stock was, I don't know, they were doing the red and the green like they do, but they were going up and the down and up and the down. But what I'm getting at is that was just a blatant, if that would have been a syndication, like the bad boy carve out would have came into effect, because they lied to Wall Street.
Wow. Wow. Well, I'm glad you made it out on the other side and you have a really good story to tell.
Yeah, I do.
Well, let's wrap it up there. Dino, thank you again for coming on. How can people get in touch with you? I want you to know that Dino has a fantastic podcast, and Dino, plug away, please.
Well, thank you. I'm easy to get a hold of. If you're a podcaster and you like that, you can look me up on iTunes or Stitcher, Edified Equity, or Dino Pierce should bring you there. And same thing on, I have a YouTube channel as well, of Dino Pierce or Edified Equity. And I'm active on social media, so you can find me on LinkedIn and Facebook.
Yeah. And we'll have links to everything in the show notes at fearfreepassive.com. Dino, thanks again. And I appreciate you coming on.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again, Dino, for coming on. We really appreciate you sharing your story. It was a good one for sure. Everything we talked about will be available at fearfreepassive.com. That includes links to everything Dino said, as well as books and anything else we discussed. I appreciate you tuning in, and I'll talk to you next week.